neighborhood. Good morning, welcome. Now, we've read the original submission, so thank you for putting that in. Very welcome to speak to that and highlight the key points for us that you'd like us to take on board.
Thank you. Good morning all. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to my submission. The initial points were bullet pointers, and so I just want to elaborate on a few of those as we go through.
Yeah, good.
Firstly, my name is Todd Anson. With my wife and family, we have interest in dairying sheep and deer. My background is that I originally grew up in Invercargill, but have an extreme passion for farming and the environment. This led me to Lincoln University, where I graduated with a double major in farm management and rural valuation. After finishing Lincoln University, I had 10 years rural banking experience and now sell rural real estate as well as farm. On our dry stock property, we have a 40 hectare QE2 covenant, and in recent times have fenced off another significant area of native bush at a personal cost of $26,000. This bush is currently home to a pair of New Zealand falcons and some rare native plants. We see ourselves as stewards of the land and believe we will hand it on to the next generation in an even better heart. I'd like to start with stating that I congratulate Todd Barclay actually for taking time to put a submission in. In his submission, he correctly states that the holding of the line and water quality is meant to be the initial objective. However, this plan seems to be preempting a limit setting process, which a lot of us find concerning. The following point Todd Barclay made as well, I concur with. Although the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management requires the management of water quality and water use, local government is directed to undertake this management in an integrated and sustainable way. The intent of the Resource Management Act is that the use and development of land and water resources are managed in a way that enables people and communities to provide their economic, social and cultural well-being. I'm concerned that this plan does not consider the economic and social implications to the same extent as environmental issues, and this specifically undermines the intent of the Resource Management Act. What science does tell us today is that we will know more tomorrow and in 10 years' time than we do today. We didn't reach where we are today overnight. It's been occurring for over a century. Therefore, it is unfair and unreasonable to expect the current individuals and communities to carry the financial burden. The process needs to be carried out over time. The Land and Water Forum 2012 Second Report, page 5, states that we share responsibility as city dwellers, farmers, as domestic and industrial users, etc., and short as New Zealanders. It also states we know that collaboration is essential to achieve this reconciliation, because it depends on reaching decisions which are widely shared and reflect both national requirements and regional and local preferences. I stress we need to take time and all work together to achieve a positive outcome and a way forward for the long-term benefit of all New Zealand. Rule 14, discharge of fertiliser, I believe needs to be amended. It states that if a waterway doesn't have a fenced riparian strip, then a 10 metre buffer zone is required for fertiliser screening. This is not sensible, with 10 metres multiplied by the length of waterways calculates to significant land that will not remain productive and hence affect incomes. Also, what type of riparian strip are you meaning? How can you clean out a waterway if they are planted on both sides? This should be amended to read that you can spread to the fence that is protecting the waterway. Spreading should be able to be accurate these days with the ability of GPS mapping and proof of placement. Intensive winter grazing we oppose. The time frame, May 2018, is too short, given some current businesses are purely based on wintering. 20 to 50 hectares per land holding. What is the definition of a land holding? It does not take into account the scale of the property. Does this mean that if you own 50 hectares, you can crop 100% every year? The vegetative strip needs to be taken into account in terms of how you're feeding your stock, in terms of breakouts and injuries as well. Grazing not to incur within 100 metres of a lake. What is the definition of a lake? Some have indicated ducklands or wetlands that you've said could fall into that category. discoloration of water or overflow. From time to time, tiles are required to be cleaned, and at such time there will be some moderate discoloration of water. While we are talking about discoloration of water, I would like to note that any local body should be treated like any individual or company under the plan. For example, the Southern District Council state that they only require the road verge for drainage purposes. However, this probably only has a chance of being correct if there is enough material on the road to make them higher than the verge. This statement appears to be contradicted by their actions, with road sumps being installed which have been tapped into farmers' tiles and cuttings being strategically made in the road verge beside waterways to allow water off the road. Given that the tiles and creeks are being used by this local body without owner consent, one wonders who's responsible for the resulting discoloration of water from the fine silts washed from these gravel roads. Then recently, the roading crew was busy just north of Winton cleaning off the side of the main road, which from a safety point of view is good. However, they then leave a road verge denuded, awaiting a heavy rain event to sluice sediment into the nearest waterway. Also, currently there are still urban effluent systems that are being dealt with differently from farmers. The Southern Times reported that 11 out of the 13 urban effluent sites under governance by the Southern District Council had breaches in the last 12 months. Also, when there is an extensive rain in the Fjordland National Park and the tourist industry that has just had $180 million injected into it is busy showing the visitors the lovely discoloured waterfalls, I can guess and only assume that central government will be issued with an infringement notice or prosecuted for discolouring the waterway. Rule 25, cultivation on sloping land, we oppose. Land greater than 20 degrees is a restricted discretionary activity with regard to cultivation under the plan. The productive capacity of farms will be affected, and hence this has economic ramifications for individuals and their supporting communities. Rule 20, farming, and Rule 22, new and expanded. Both of these rules require clarification. Does this apply to all landowners? For example, if there is a piece of neighbouring land that can be added to an existing dairy farm, it seems that this has been taken as a new conversion application. Stock access to surface water. The timeframes need to be looked at given the capital expense faced by some individuals RE fencing and then the flow-on requirement of a water scheme. Also, some land is impractical. It is impractical to achieve. As has already been stated in the initial stage one of Southland Economic Project Agriculture and Forestry Report, page 19, 1.3.1, the economy. Southland's economy is heavily reliant on the agriculture and is the third largest in New Zealand as measured in regional GDP after Canterbury and the Waikato. In Southland, agriculture's share of regional GDP is 22% versus Canterbury's at 7.5% and the Waikato at 11%. As at 2014, 23,500 jobs were supported by agriculture in Southland, and their per capita GDP is five times higher than the New Zealand average. These numbers are significant when Southland's total population struggles to reach 100, and at that time probably 50,000 were actually working. Southland Economic Project, page 238, 3.4 mitigation results. It clearly shows that the reduction in nitrogen and phosphorus used per hectare has a very strong influence on operational profit per hectare. Following on from this, as stated on page 24 of the Southland Agriculture and Forestry Economic Project, overall, Southland's reliance on agriculture means that changes in people's use of water as a result of setting limits for fresh water are likely to have greater impacts than similar changes in other regions. It needs to be remembered that everything that people would like to happen costs money, hence making changes quickly will not only stifle the economy and therefore the money available, also it will allow science to prove that we have done it wrong due to rushing. I find it interesting that the government on one hand wants to double the country's export earnings, which one would think indicates increased productivity, and on the other hand they are stating that water quality needs to be improved by nutrient capping, which will affect farm productivity. I would be interested to hear Nick Smith's explanation. The current money being spent by government in joint venture partnerships is all about targeting increased farm productivity. Where is the research into adding value to what we already produce? And I suppose I've just got, recently we had to take a daughter to a sports camp in near Tauranga, and as ladies do, they go shopping and kids have a play and men wait for the ladies to finish shopping, and while you do that, when there's big container ships going in and out and there's piles of logs and you know, whether it's meat or tons of milk powder that are going out, you start to think that, isn't it an interesting concept that here we are considering we don't feed the world for many days, that we consider that we will continue to send product overseas to allow people to process something and make more money. Where, you know, where is the government actually taking a positive situation and saying, hey, if we actually spent money in capital development ourselves in New Zealand, increased jobs for New Zealanders, manufactured and produced products that increased our export earnings, which is what they're wanting to try and achieve, and hopefully by that situation happening, the producer may end up getting paid slightly more and indirectly could survive on the same baseline by farming in a slightly less intense manner, and it would be a happy situation, I think, for all. But anyway, that's what you do when you're waiting for your wife to finish shopping. But I think just finally, you know, you all need to be aware of the wide-reaching consequences of your decisions and take this responsibility extremely seriously as individuals. You know, many of the proposed points in the plan affect property rights. By influencing property rights, and you in turn affect asset values. Let me explain from a banking point of view. Banks take security over assets when lending money, and they discount these assets to get a bank value, depending on how tangible they are, i.e. freehold land being the best. If property values decline, the bank value also drops, and hence the security margin changes, resulting in the property owner potentially paying a higher interest rate for his borrowings. Also, it may affect the business's ability to secure borrowings in the future, hence restricting family succession due to funds not being able to be raised to allow the older generation to make way for the younger generation. Also, the immediate viability could be affected, resulting in the current staff being laid off or property sale. That's if the farm asset is still deemed to have liquidity at the end of this process. I was recently talking to an elderly farmer, and when I asked him why he had not put a submission in, his response was, "My time in farming is almost finished, thank goodness, given the proposed change of rules." However, for those of us that are still the future of farming in Southland, it is very concerning and unacceptable that we are getting the province's water quality issues dropped at our feet. As stated above, we need to take time and all work together to achieve a positive outcome and way forward for the long-term benefit of all of New Zealand. Currently, I don't believe that all parties are being treated equally. Finally, I would urge you to reconsider on these issues and take some more time to work things through in a supportive and equitable way. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Branson. Just got one question at the start, and don't take this as a criticism. I'm assuming from your presentation to us that you haven't had a chance to look through the Section 42A report.
Oh, I haven't, to be fair, no, sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm that. And you made the point that you think the proposed plan preempts limit setting. I'm just a bit curious about that. Could you explain to us why you think that's the case?
Well, basically, like, I mean, if you actually go through and read bits of the plan, like, it's definitely talking about, I suppose, well, none of us are sitting here saying that we don't want to work together in terms of basically, obviously, for the betterment of, you know, all of New Zealand. But I think basically, well, whether I'm interpreting incorrectly, but I mean, a lot of us are reading the plan believing that it's basically talking about, obviously, some significant change, which then talks about productivity or property rights issues, which property rights issues then flow on to how, what you can do with your land. And currently at the moment, obviously if they get changed, like the previous presenter was saying, you know, they've got some significant implications on their property, which comes back to nutrients. We're trying to track this nutrient loss or overflow runoff and discoloration of water and sediment. So it all flows to basically indicating that limit setting's coming and what degree are we going to have to deal with.
Yeah, well, limit setting is definitely coming. It's required under the National Policy Statement on Fresh Water, so all councils around New Zealand have to do that. But I was just curious about why you thought this plan might preempt that.
Well, it's just in terms of the nation, and I suppose that a lot of the stuff that you read, it talks about intensive wintering, but it continually refers to dearing as well, rather than basically, I mean, intensive wintering can be not just dearing.
Okay. All right, we'll just see if we have any questions for you, Lord.
No question, but I'd really like to, for the completeness, grab the notes that we weren't provided with something a bit short.
I've given a copy to the lady. Okay. Sorry.
No, apart from that, you make points clear, so thank you.
I need no further explanation.
No, thank you.
And Morris?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I have two questions. At the outset, Todd, you talked about, you quoted from the RMA, talking about the protecting or providing for, I'll just get it, enabling communities to provide for their social, economic and cultural well-being and for their health and safety. But you stop there, and after that there are three sub-clauses of that clause which talk about protecting the environment, so that we need to provide for all of those things you talked about, but in doing so we've got to basically protect the environment as well. So how do you interpret those second parts where there's evidence that some adverse effects are occurring? How do you think we could do this plan differently from what we're proposing to do, given that we do need to provide for both of those things, provide for the community, health and economic prosperity, but also protect the environment?
Well, I think it's, I mean, as I say, like, I think we're all sitting here that most farmers that are sitting here obviously like custodians of the land, because basically if they don't look after the land, it doesn't look after them. And I mean, if we sit here and analyse ourselves, we probably get depressed the fact that we get up 365 days of the year, and if you look at the yield that most people get on their capital investment, which provides a very nice living for a lot of people in New Zealand, given the percentage of GDP that's earned from export earnings, farmers probably need a good pat on their back. But I mean, when it comes down to it, it's a combination. But as I said when I was presenting, is that all of what wants to happen in terms of whether it's water or environment requires money. Mm. So therefore, I suppose one of the biggest concerns out there for a lot of people is that, you know, by urban, industrial, agricultural, forestry, we've been coming here for a long time, as I said, like, you know, over a century, to get to the point we are, and a lot of people were probably very apprehensive in terms of where we're going to get to from a time frame, in terms of how long are we looking to work forward. Like, I mean, there's no doubt that if we basically put too much financial or burden because of it onto existing communities or individuals, that obviously the economy is going to be affected, which then doesn't allow us to probably work in a positive way together to be able to create what we want long term. And it's, I mentioned a couple of times that we need to take time. Mm. You know, I don't think if this is a quick fix or try to be done quickly, we're going to actually probably get into a situation that we're not going to end up with the result that we want at the other side.
Okay. Mm. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to get some clarification about your concerns regarding runoff from roads with the fine silts entering streams. That wasn't in your original submission, but I think it's certainly a valid point that you bring up. So how can we deal with that, do you think? Are there better ways of managing that that we do at the moment?
Well, sorry, it just flowed onto a discoloration period. And to be fair, the contractors that are currently doing the work in South, and I'd say better than the previous lot, they're actually doing something. But, I mean, you know, we've had situations with drainage in terms of obviously with roads and so forth, from a farming point of view, and we've had the council out and they just clearly state that none of the ditches on the side of the road are their responsibility. Farmers put them there, and that basically they only need the road verge. But to be fair, if you know, you drive around a lot of southern roads, you're in a situation that there's not enough material on it. Now, if there's enough material on it, and then but what this road and contract has done now, at least they've sprayed the actual, the initial side of it. Now, but if a farmer was going to go and do that, they would be pulling those sides, because a fair chunk of that side's actually got a lot of gravel sitting in it. Mm-hmm. And you'd be pulling it up and pulling it up, because at the moment what happens is if it rains and you get a weather event and you've got a verge, a lip like that on the side of the road, that becomes sodden with water. Mm-hmm. So it becomes impervious. So the water actually hits that, and then it rains, runs to the lowest point. And as it's running, it obviously creates momentum and starts getting, and then basically, now we've, as I pointed out to these people, sumps that they've tapped into our tiles, we never gave them permission to do it. And why do they need the sumps if basically the road verge is so supposedly sufficient? And then I've got photos of creeks that are in actual our property, but they've done cuttings on this side of the road that basically at the top end of the road, and then the silt just keeps building up. Yeah. So first thing is you've got to get more material on the roads, and you've got to get those lips off, so the water can actually get run off the road onto the verge, if that's what they're saying, for drainage, versus actually running to the lowest point.
Right. Mm. Just manage them better.
But it costs money.
Yeah.
Because to be fair, like, they've been let go for so long and not enough maintenance.
Okay, thanks very much, Todd. That's great.
And thanks, Mr. Anderson, for coming in. I don't have any further questions or clarifications for you.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.